Coming up on today's show,
I would not be here without my songwriting family. A lot of us leave our families, we leave everything that we know, and we move to this town chasing a dream. And it can be very lonely. But you gotta have that circle of friends that are, especially like, that get what you're trying to do.
Took off and didn't turn around. Left me in a half-empty house.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net. Or instead of email, you are welcome to DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, guitar player who is signed with Sony Music Publishing Nashville and Drop Time Music Publishing. He earned chart success with his first number one single, My Boy, by Elvie Shane, as well as with cuts by Drew Green. His latest hit, Whiskey on You by Nate Smith, has topped the Canadian charts and reached number one on Billboard's country airplay. As a performer, he has been on countless stages at a wide range of venues and events and will be performing later this year in Denmark. You've been hearing a song of his called Casamigos. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Russell Sutton.
How's it going, Bruce?
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you, Russell. Glad to have you here, and I appreciate you making time. Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song that was just playing called Casamigos.
Yeah, man. So that's probably the newest song that I've written. And I wrote it with my buddy Lee Starr, who also is one of my day one buddies, which I'm sure we'll get into that whole story, but remember that name. And he was kind of joking around, like we didn't have much to write about. And he was like, man, I got this funny, I got a funny title. It's called Casamigos. It's about a guy just sitting around by himself drinking just him and his Casamigos. and he just kind of laughed. And I was like, that's brilliant. That's absolutely what we're writing today. That is 100% what we're doing and nothing else. So yeah, we just wrote that song, got a demo with the full band and the session guys, Ilya Tsensky and all those guys at Station West and Studio West, which is an amazing thing to watch. Those guys just like go in there and play, and like you play in this work tape on an iPhone and like you're all standing around a console and they're kind of all talking to each other, like, and you kind of think they're not paying attention. And they've never heard the song before. The song's over, they're like, all right, y'all want to give it a shot? And it's like, wait, did y'all want to maybe give it one more listen?
Or? Wow.
And then they go in there and they absolutely, and then that's what they come out with.
Wow.
You know, in a matter of about 20 minutes. It's one of the most impressive things. Still one of my favorite things to do as a writer is to walk in there with something that you have on acoustic guitar and they come out with that.
Tell me this, what percentage of the time is a song written from the scenario that you just described where someone just kind of throws some out and they're just joking around and you go, you know what? That's gold. We're writing that. No, seriously, man. I was just kidding around. I'm serious. We really are writing that. How often does that happen?
You know, I don't know the percentage, but I know it happens, you know, enough to say that it happens.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I would say quite a bit. I can think of a lot of songs that have happened that way. But, you know, when you write 4 or 5 times a week, it's hard to say a number of times. But it's definitely not a weird thing for that to happen.
Well, yeah, and I was going to say, when you're writing 4 or 5 times a week, wouldn't it be argued that you are going to jump on those more often than not? Because it's not the easiest thing in the world coming up with all these song ideas day after day after day. So someone throws out something like Casamigos, you go, you know what? Let's do it. Let's write that.
Yeah, I mean, I've 100% never heard that before. You know, and Lee's a pretty... He's one of the funniest guys, but at the same time, one of the most serious people I've ever met.
I can just see you walking out of that right there, shaking your head and going, man, we wrote that. Casamigos.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But yeah, just me and my Casamigos, just a guy and one in a bottle of tequila. And I'm just, that's just hilarious.
I am amazed, Russell, and the audience will be amazed at the fact that I read off all those accolades in the intro, and yet your story actually starts with having worked for Dell, as in Dell Computers?
Yeah, man. So I grew up in Austin, and my dad was in the business for a little while. Actually, my dad's a veterinarian. Then, like, in, like, 92, my dad sold off his vet clinics, and he decided that he wanted to do music. Because, I mean, he'd always done music back in the 70s, kind of part of that whole, like, Jerry Jeff. Like, he and Lyle Lovett played guitar together on the steps of the core dorms at A&M. Whoa. Robert Earl Keen was there at the same time as him, and they were just guys, you know. And then he played, you know, with Dennis Ivey and a lot of those cats back in the 70s in the Texas scene. And then he got his vet license and then went and did that. And then, like, when I was, like, the second grade, he sold it off and he went out on the road as tour manager and guitar player for a guy named Rick Trevino back in the 90s, who had, you know, She Can't Say I Didn't Cry, Bobby Ann Mason, Just Enough Rope, Dr. Time, like, Running Out of Reasons to Run. You know, all these songs. I mean, he had a couple top fives, at least one number one. And so he did that for like 7 years. And in the summers, I would go ride the bus with him. Mm. And that's how, like, I got to hang with my dad growing up between like second grade until he came off the road when I was in the ninth grade. Wow. And just went back to being a veterinarian.
Oh my
and
gosh.
So anyways, like, so I grew up around country music. I grew up around the business a little bit in a way, kind of in the middle of my life, you know. And then I was an indentured servant in a vet clinic for a long time, but we don't need to get into that. And then,
yeah, I'm waiting to hear how you're going to go from having a front row seat for 7 years to the music business to winding up working for Dell Computers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, like, growing up around that as a kid, though, like, it was awesome. But, like, the number one party for Whiskey on You was actually on Monday. And we went to that on Monday, and my dad was in town, and, like, we were just sitting around sharing stories about his time on the road and, like, my time on the road with LB Shane as a duo, which I'm sure we'll get into here in a minute. But, like, anyway, so we're going through all this kind of stuff. My dad's telling a story about losing me at a festival in Grand Junction, Colorado when I was 12 years old, and he couldn't find me, and he's radioing everybody. And then he sees this long-haired blonde kid in an 18-wheeler, and he runs over to this guy, and it's Vince Gill showing me around his 18-wheeler and all of his guitars and stuff, you know? But, like, so to me, yeah, it was cool when you were a kid, but when normal is cool, like, it wasn't weird. You know what I mean? Like, I was so young that, like, they were just people that I loved their music. And I think it was a special thing to, like, not have that starstruck thing, because it was just like, these are my dad's coworkers kind of. And, like, I'd known Rick, like, long, you know, before he was a star even, you know, and all that, when he was playing karaoke gigs at the Mexican restaurant downtown, we'd go watch. You know, back when they would sing to a karaoke track, dude, straight up. That's what they would do. They would take karaoke tracks into a bar, and, like, people would just come in, and they'd be like, we're going to give you a record deal. Can you imagine that?
Wow.
And people are crazy now because you're on TikTok, and they're like, how are you giving guys record deals on TikTok? They get rid of guys' record deals off of a freaking karaoke day. You know what I mean? That's weird. You can go get made at the mall. You know what I mean? I don't know. That's wild. Anyway. I don't mean to go down. Anyway, so you're asking about Dell, though. So. All right, man. So anyway, so I drove around.
So a scout for Dell Computers was at a Vince Gill show.
So, the reason I say all that is that, like, my dad had been a part of the business, and he got how hard it was. And I've always been really talented. Just God-given talented. Self-taught guitar, you know, won my eighth grade talent show with a band called Fonzie and the Flaming Cows. And we played Sweet Home Alabama, and I taught my three friends how to play instruments for that. And we won the talent show. And then the teacher band had to come on after us and really trump us.
Of course.
Dude, broke a string, and I was like, can I please use your guitar for our show? We were right before I played one song. He's like, nah, can't risk it. I'm like, this was that guy's moment. You know what I mean? Anyway. I'll never forget that. He couldn't risk me breaking his string. You know what I mean? And he's been teaching math for 9 years. Anyway, I'm 11. So anyway, all right, Bruce, I'm sorry. I'm going to get to the Delta. So anyway, I grew up around it. My dad knew how hard it was, right? And so he always said, if it's what you really want to do, man, like, go for it. I will never discourage you, but I will always encourage you that if you can do anything else, do it. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Because just because the odds are so stacked against you, it's like, it's like how many incredibly talented athletes don't make the Olympics? How many kids that were like the all-state quarterback from whatever state they were from in high school don't make the pros? Yeah,
great point. Great point.
You know? And so that was his point. He's like, I'll support you in whatever you really want to do, but I'm just telling you, man, like if there's anything else you can do, please do it. And so like I'd seen all that, and I'd seen like just the burnout from the road, and not even like anything negative other than just like being gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all that. Like, so I went to school at A&M. I was, you know, third generation Aggie. I got a degree in management, finance, and international business. I decided I wanted to take over the world and the corporate world. And then I forgot I needed to get a job when I graduated. And I had like a month to find a job. Like, I was very fortunate enough that like my grandfather and my inheritance from him was that he would pay for my school. And so like I got to go to Texas A&M to the business school and get 4 years worth of school for free from my grandfather. And every semester I would have to go talk to him, you know, show him my stuff and my grades, talk about it, And then he'd write me a check for tuition for the next semester. I failed out of college my first semester with a 0.75 and I got kicked out of A&M. And then I had to reapply as a general studies major. So my dad told me I owed him 10 grand. Right. And I didn't have any money. And he goes, now, if you get a 4.0 next semester, you don't owe me any money, but I'm picking your schedule. So I got a 4.0 the next semester, a 3.75, 3.75, 3.5, got back into the business school and graduated with 3 degrees, went to work at Dell, did really well there. I got the job at Dell because I forgot to apply for jobs. And I was like, wait, Dell's in Austin. I can just figure, yeah, I know that place. And then I worked there, man, and I'd worked my way up. I worked there for 7 years total, and to work my way up to being one of the younger kids in my division. I was the account executive for the state government of Maryland, doing about 45-something million a year for Dell.
Wow.
You know, I made great money for being 26 and single with no kids or anything like that, you know, and I was absolutely miserable.
Oh, gosh. Plot twist.
Yeah, I was miserable. Like, I wasn't rich. You know, I made 6 figures at the end of the last year that I was there, very low, six figures. But when you're single with no kid, dude, like, you feel rich. You know? But I was just miserable. You know, I mean, I hated what I did every day. You know, all I knew about computers was checking my bank account and the other thing. And, like, so I didn't love it. And I looked around and I was like, man, that guy over there, like, probably makes close to a million a year, but, like, the furthest I can move is about 20 feet away, you know, and it scared me to death. And that life is like, that life works for a lot of people. And I'm still friends with a lot of them today that like, they like that structure. They like that security. They like all that, you know, and that works for them. And that's amazing. And I guarantee you that if I had a wife and kids at that time, I'd still be working at Dell. You know, I guarantee it. But it was like, man, I knew I wasn't happy, but I didn't have that other thing to fulfill me as far as happiness. You know, what happiness is really about, come to find out now that I've got a 2-year-old and I'm married. But like, so I was like, man, well, this isn't it. So I quit my job in July of 2013. And I lived in a 2-bedroom apartment by myself. And I turned my second room into a writing room. And every day for 6 months after I quit my job, I wrote songs. Every single day. Because there was the Austin Songwriters Conference that was happening in January of 2014. And it was an event where, like, they bring a bunch of publishers from Nashville down. And it was, like, Chelsea Kent, who was at Still Working Publishing, which was Roy Orbison's company. Janine Appleton, who was at Word at the time. Hannah Shoemake, I think was her name at the time. She was at Parallel with Ten Hanzi. And, like, so, I mean, there's some big names coming to town. And I was like, all right, so I'm going to write. Because, I mean, it's what I'd always wanted to do. But, you know, one thing that kept me from moving was that my mom had gotten breast cancer when I was in college, stage 4. She was a 10-year survivor. But I was like, man, if she ever got sick again, I wouldn't forgive myself. She found out about it, caught wind of it, and was like, it would break my heart more if you didn't go. So finally, so we get down to that whole deal. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm going to find out if this is a dream or a pipe dream. And so I wrote for 6 months. And I go to this deal, and play songs for these publishers, and there's, you know, 150, 200 people at this conference, and they picked out 2 writers from this deal, and it was me and a guy I had just met named Lee Starr. And
Lee Starr.
The aforementioned, the man, the myth, the legend.
And let me jump in here for a second, because for the uninitiated in the audience who are thinking, oh, was he trying to go to this conference to get a record deal? No. There's a big difference. A lot of the shift in the music business, especially for indie artists nowadays, is realizing that a record deal, and maybe it was then, but nowadays it's not the be-all, end-all they need or want to chase anymore. And a lot of folks instead set their sights on a publishing deal. And that's what you're talking about from back at this conference. So tell us about how you got your first publishing deal in a duo called Grassroots Revival.
Yeah, man. All right. So like fast forward a little bit, you know, I do have to say real quick to go back to that whole story is that I met Lee Starr at that conference, knew him for 48 hours. He calls me 8 months later and says, can I sleep on your couch so I find a place to live in Nashville? He did. We taught each other how to co-write songs. Mm. Fast forward to writing My Boy. And I wrote that with LB Shane, Lee Starr, and Nick Columbia. And we were all just a bunch of friends hanging out on a back porch. And we had written that song, you know, amongst a lot of other songs. But this was at a time whenever I didn't have a publishing deal. Nobody did. And I was living with a guy named Ryan Rossabo, who is still a great friend and a genius producer in his own right. And he's kind of the guy that it was like he had established a group here, you know, in Nashville. And they kind of let me in and then by proxy let a couple of my friends in. You know what I mean? But it was more like I was being absorbed in Ryan's group and all that. So I lived with Ryan and he was producing artists. And Lee and I, you know, being that I lived with Ryan and Lee and I had been, you know, kind of moved to town together. Like Lee was always at the house. And Nick Columbia is another one of those guys that was always our buddies and over there. And Ryan had met this guy named, you know, LB Shane. And he's like, man, this guy's a great singer and all that. But like he needs some songs, you know, and Ryan's producing EPs for people and then trying to get them record deals and all that. So living in a house like that was really valuable that, you know, he was bringing in artists that were wanting to make projects. But if they didn't quite have the songs, he had a handful of songwriters that he knew were great.
Yeah, no
and
doubt.
I don't say that we were great at the time, but I mean, we got a number one hit. Yeah, so I mean, I don't know.
No, but I understand the spirit with which you're saying that, that it's yeah. kind of like, you know, gee, I just happen to have a writer in the next room.
Yeah, but if you asked me today, if I was great today when I left my ride, I'd be like, absolutely not, Bruce. I was not great. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's just like we have things. But anyways, so like, it's not an ego thing at all, but like, it just all three of those guys I love to death. And anyway, so in walks this guy from freaking Kentucky. He's like, hi, my name's LB Shane. And we're like, hey, LB Shane. And we had written a couple songs with him. And then he showed up that day to write My Boy. And I figure I'll tell this story. And I know you asked me how I was in the duo, but like the duo wouldn't have existed without this song existing. So that's kind of why I went to this topic first.
No, that's okay. Cause I was going to ask you about writing My Boy anyways and the journey of that song to number one. So go ahead, tie it all together yeah. for us.
Yeah, yeah. So LB shows up and the write was supposed to be me and LB and Nick Columbia. And Lee Starr worked at Papa Lock and he was just tired. And he had swung by on his way home from work to see what we were doing. And he was about to leave. And I swear this happened. This is not an exaggeration. They were like, get him to stay, Russ. Just get him to stay. I was like, dude, I'll get him to stay. I'll put this guitar in his hand. And if I put it in his hand, he'll start playing it. He walks outside on the porch where we were sitting. I go, hey, will you hold this guitar? I got to go pee for a second. And I go inside and I come back a couple minutes later and he's playing the intro to My Boy. And we were like, what's that? He's like, I don't know, just something I've been fiddling with. So we had it. And I was like, told y'all he'd stay. And he's like, God dang it, guys. You know what I mean? Like that whole thing. He's like, I'm exhausted. Laura's going to kill me. You know, Laura's is now his wife. Oh, which side note, he met on the love seat at my first house that he lived on.
Oh my
gosh. So that's how you know it's love. And they also have a 2-year-old little boy named Bo now. And but anyway, LB's like, man, I want to write a song for my stepson. And we were like, all right, well, so LB has a stepson. And so we were like, oh, well, you know, tell us about him, you know? And he's like, I don't know, man, he's just my boy. And if you haven't figured out, that's just kind of how LB talks. And if you meet him, like, it might be a caricature, but it's pretty close. And anyway, he's like, man, I don't know. He's just my boy. And Nick Columbia was the genius that was like, there's our song, guys. It's called My Boy. Mm. And then we were off to the races. And we wrote that song. It probably took us from, like, 5, 6 o'clock in the afternoon till 2, 3 in the morning, you know. Mm. And there were times where we'd all cried and all that, you know. Like, and so we get to the end of the chorus, right? And we didn't know what to do with the second verse. And we're all kind of just sitting there staring out at this field, you know, and it's like, we've been there for a minute. And I was like, guys, look, here's my only experience with this is I was dating a girl at the time who had a 7-year-old that I had dated in Austin, and I broke up with her in Austin before I moved, just, you know, because I was moving to Nashville to chase my dream. Mm-hmm. Story checks out. I look up a few months later. She lives a block away with her 7-year-old. So we got back together. Lonely's a hell of a drug, Bruce. You know? But anyway, so let's just say it didn't go well. All right. So I was like, look, guys, here's my only experience is I dated blank. I won't say her name. And I was like, I was with her. She had a 7-year-old. I was like, I was sitting on the couch. Her son comes home with a picture that says me, mom, and dad. And it's a picture of us three. And he's telling us about it. And she goes, oh, my God, this is so inappropriate. And tells him to go in the other room. And then she's like, I'm so sorry. I just can't. It's way too early for that. And I was like, if you don't go put that in the fridge, you are the worst person I've ever met in the world. What is wrong with you? And I just go, guys, that is my only experience with it. And Lee Starr, again, he goes, well, that's a pretty cool story if you take away the punchline.
And turn it into the next verse.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, for that second verse, it's a pretty cool story, actually. If you take out that last part, you know? And so that's how we ended up with, you know, he came home with a 3-stick figure crown picture with all of us holding hands, you know? And then his mama said, I know it's too soon for this, but I said, you know, stuck it on the fridge.
So cool.
So that's cool. How that came about. And then, so we'd written that song, and then we all kind of thought we did something special. And we'd pitched that song around, and so many people loved it. It was obviously the first song that any of us had that people in town were like, well, that's an effing song, dude. You know, like, it was the first time anyone had said that about any of our songs, where they're like, dude, that competes in a big way, you know? And getting that kind of feedback, like, starting out just like little trickles from your buddies and then other people and all that, well, then you start believing it a little bit. And I was on a back porch with LB Shane one night, and we were kind of singing each other's songs. I knew all his songs. He knew all my songs. But before that, he had fired all his entire band on a Tuesday.
Whoa.
And there's nobody I love and hate more than LB Shane in this entire world. He's like my brother. I mean, right? So he calls me at like 9 p.m. on a Tuesday. He's like, hey, man, fire my whole band today. I'm like, why? He's like, well, I got gigs this weekend, but they hadn't rehearsed, man, so I just fired all of them. Wow. You play guitar, right? And I was like, oh, God, I see where this is going. Yeah. So basically, he wanted me to learn, you know, like a 4-hour set to go play these two gigs. And then we'd find a Cajon player, you know, and we'd just do this acoustic thing, and I'd sing harmonies with him and everything. And I was like, LB, that means I got to stay up nonstop for the next like 36 to 48 hours learning all this stuff. And then I got to go on the road with you in a van or in your truck or whatever we had, you know, this weekend and play 2 4-hour gigs for very minimal money, you know. But I'll tell you this, I was dead broke. I was about to have to go get a gig as like a valet at the Omni or something.
Okay.
I even turned in an application to be a bartender, and I've got 3 degrees, and they were like, sorry, you don't have any experience. And I'm just like, you don't make a drink? I don't know, dude. Well, how am I supposed to start? You know what I mean? I drink a lot. No, I'm kidding.
So you stared at the ceiling and said, all right, LB, we're doing it.
Yeah. So I said, if I'm your last call, I'll do it, dude. So I hung up the phone, and I swear on my life, he called me back right away as soon as I set my phone down. I was like, what? He goes, you're my last call. I swear. Wow. And I was like, all right, whatever, man. So I played a few shows with him, like, and all that, and I needed the money, man, and it was keeping me from having to go get another job that wasn't related to music. And then we were on a back porch, and we were singing each other's songs, and one of my buddies that had been shopping for a record deal, who's also incredibly talented, his name's Kyle Coulihan, and he was like, man, I've been looking for a record deal, and every room I go in, they're like, oh, no, he goes, y'all are a great duo. We were like, we're not a duo. He's like, well, every room I've been going in for record deal offers, they're looking for a duo, man, so maybe y'all should be a duo. And LB and I just kind of looked at each other, and we're like, hell with it. Let's be a duo, man.
Wow.
You know? And I'm not kidding. Like, he had the voice. He's one of the absolute best singers I've ever heard in my life. And I had the songs at the time, you know, my boy included. So, like, we were, like, at worst. And he had one or two that we loved. And it's like, at worst, we've got an EP right now, you know, that we could do, you know, 6 songs or whatever. So we kind of got a manager. And then within a couple months, we had 6 national act shows.
Okay. Whoa.
Yeah. Whoa. And we didn't even have a band yet. Okay. Wow. We didn't have a logo. We didn't have a T-shirt. We took Elvie's old t-shirt and just took off Elvie Shane and put Grassroots Revival. Like, same design, the whole deal, dude. Which brings me to, we were all of a sudden Grassroots Revival. And just recently, we lost an absolute great in this industry, and that's Toby Keith. And man, like, he was the first show that I ever did in front of anybody other than a church congregation. Wow. You know what I mean? Wow. I mean, like, I'd played like acoustic shows and stuff, like at dive bars and coffee shops, but not like played shows, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's me and Elvie on acoustic guitars, and we have a cajon player, you know, a little box that you sit on a snack.
Yep.
And we're the only opening act for Toby for two shows in California. Mm. Friday night was in Murphy's, California. And we get on stage for soundcheck, and it's a 10,000, you know, 12,000 person amphitheater, right? And there's not a soul in there. And we go up for soundcheck with these two acoustic guitars and a cajon, and we don't have ears. We're using wedges and stuff. And so it's just like the bounce back in this place. It's just like we couldn't even make it through a song. It's like I never played guitar. I was having a panic attack, and I'm the chillest dude you've ever met. Mm. You know what I mean? I mean, like, freaking out, man. Like I'm a fraud. This is unbelievable what's happening. Wow. And it's because, like, you play something, and 2 seconds later, it comes back and hits you again while you're also hitting what you're playing now, and it all just becomes one big thing of noise. You know what I mean? And it's the weirdest thing, and you hear about it and all that. But I wasn't thinking that. I was like, oh, man, you know, all these people are watching. So I called my dad. My dad was like, man, just trust me. And my dad, you know, he'd been on the road. He'd done all those giant shows. And he just said, man, trust me. Once there's people in there, it won't happen, and you're going to crush it. But more than thinking about that, I want you to be here today. Soak this up. He's like, I'm not saying that you won't be here again, but you'll never be on the first one again. And he said, my advice to you is after all the cool stuff that I did. I mean, he played the biggest shows you could play. You know, Texas State with George Strait. All that, you know, like, and he's like, I wish that I would have been in the moment more. Right? And not like thinking about, God, we've got to get to this next show. And then we got this and this. Because he was tour manager and guitar player. You know, so he was like, just soak it up, man. He goes, I know how good you are, and there's no way it can be that bad. You know?
I love it.
And so we went up there, and we're with Toby, though. And sure as shit, we get up there, and we have a 45-minute acoustic set. And it went great, you know. And Toby's guys were phenomenal. Super Dave, who had known my dad back on the road. My dad had done so many tours with Toby Keith, and I'd even been on the road with Toby and my dad and Sawyer Brown back on this like tour that they did, you know, at some point in that tour. Cause I mean, they did like 7 months with them, you know? And so I know I was out there at some point. They did like 5 months straight in Canada. Longest time my dad was ever gone from the house when I was a kid. Anyways, there's like so many like tied together back things of like my childhood and Toby Keith and all that. And then he's the first show we're doing. Then the next night, you know, like he was so sweet and invited us to come hang when we were in San Diego at the San Diego County Fair. Wow. And he goes, hey, I'll tell you what. He goes, and granted, if we had had a full band, this would have meant something, but he meant the sentiment the same. He goes, I ain't going to turn your volume down. I'm going to turn your volume up. He goes, you go out there and you put on a better show than me, you can open for me. He goes, I'll open for you next time.
Hmm.
And he goes, because every time I used to go up, people turn my volume down because they want to be better than me. He goes, damn it. If you outperform me, then you deserve to close. You know, and it was just his sentiment of the whole thing was amazing. Yeah. We hung with he and his wife and David Wells, the Yankees no hitter pitcher.
Yeah,
the baseball pitcher. Yeah, he was there. He's from San Diego. We're hanging out with Toby, his wife, and old Wellsy until like 2 a.m, right? And Toby's wife was like, at 2 a.m. he's y'all's responsibility. And I was the only one that was even like really sober enough. I'm not gonna say sober enough to be paying attention to what she was saying. I said, ma'am, I'm sorry. You know, she's like, no, he's your responsibility. If y'all don't leave before 2, he's going with y'all. I was like, I don't know what that means, but sure enough, dude, it's 4:30. I got a picture on my phone when we're all saying goodbye. 4:30, we get in the car. And old Wellsy is in the car laying across us, and he's not a small man. He's about 6'5".
Yeah.
Anyway, we get to the gate of his like place in San Diego. He's like, hey, it's Wellsy. You can tell that the security guard was like, this isn't the first time. We get to his house, like shows us his massive guitar collection. About 6 a.m., he goes to get another drink in the house, falls down the stairs, busts his tooth out, and breaks his thumb.
Wow.
Comes back in with the boss, just bleeding, doesn't even care. Pops his thumb back in and goes, "Where were we?" And I was like, "Oh my God, what a man. What a man. Good Lord."
Crazy. Know?
But also at the same time was like, it's about time to get go. So we went. But like, that was an amazing night. Wild stuff. So we're Grassroots Revival.
So tie all that back into now your Grassroots Revival. You get your first publishing deal.
Yeah. So we're Grassroots Revival, and part of that deal is like, they were like, we had some soft record deal offers and stuff, and that's how we got the national act shows. We were booked with United Talent. And so at that point, we were like, great guys, love the record deal talk, but like, we need money now, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, we can't even get to the next show. And so we had found a publishing company, and Lisa Johnson was going to run it, and we had found a backer, Jim, and he lives in Colorado. He's a great guy. And basically just financed the whole company. We were at the Aaron Watson show, which was another one of our national act shows that we did up in Colorado. He came out and he met us, and he came to the show. And during Aaron's show, we kind of sat there and talked about our dreams and our goals and da da da. And he's a guy that, if it's not a B, it's close to a B after how much money he's got, you know? And he wrote a check for the whole company and said that should float the company for y'all two to have a paycheck for 4 years and to have a publishing deal. And Lisa can run it and y'all figure out the details. But I don't invest to make money. I invest in people. And I love what y'all are doing. And so shout out to him for giving me my first shot in Nashville and giving me a paycheck and giving me food on the table. You know, and it wasn't much, man. I mean, I want to say it was like $2,500 a month or three, you know, something like that. Enough to pay rent and eat, you know, but like, we weren't rich by any means. And now we're Grassroots Revival. We've got a publishing deal. We're writing. And then, you know, a duo thing, man, like, we loved what we were doing together. But, like, we had already seen a couple of creative differences just between us, you know. And not in a hostile way.
Just sure.
What he wanted to do musically and what was honest and true to him as an artist and what was honest and true to me, like, man, I'm just going to be honest. What's honest and true to me is top 40 radio. That's what I grew up on. That's what I do. Like, that's just kind of my thing. I don't try to do it. I do it. I tried for a long time not to do it. like what people would consider commercial hits.
So then transition to your second deal, which was with Jim Cattino and Sony and the opportunities that that has created for you.
Yeah, man. So, the whole thing with LB and all that, like, that all was a great chapter. And then I got to go back and write songs full time. LB went and got his deal with BMG, you know, got his record deal. They, you know, they said they're putting My Boy out as the first single. That just so happened to be in the last year of my publishing deal with them.
Wow.
You know, I did 4 years with Roam Free Publishing, and it was great. They gave me my first shot in town. But we kind of all felt like we'd outgrown each other and that everybody was really focused on LB's career and was about to take off. And so it was no hard feelings. And like, we all parted ways as great friends. But I was like, I'm going to go pursue something else on my own as a writer. And I'll still write with LB and we'll, you know, we all still love each other, but I'm going to try and do my thing, you know? And so I called Leslie Roberts at BMI, who has still been my rep from day one, and she didn't have to be. And I love her to death. And so shout out to Leslie Roberts at BMI. And I called her and I was like, hey, my deal's coming up and who's hiring? Because I'm going to need a paycheck, you know?
Yeah.
And she was like, well, man, you know, Jim Cattino, who I knew Jim Cattino because I already knew his name. I mean, he's a legend, at least here for our generation. You know, he's been at Sony Records for 20 years. He was the head of A&R, signed so many acts at Sony Records. And one of those is including one of my best friends, Drew Green. You know, Jim had signed him to a record deal. So Jim had already, and this is just kind of funny, I'm probably skipping around, but like Jim, it's funny, he'd already known a bunch of my songs because Drew and I have probably written more songs together than anybody. Because like, while Lee and I have written a lot of songs together, like Drew is one of those guys that was a songwriting machine and wanted to write 16 hours a day and pushed me to write 16, you know, I mean, to an unhealthy level at certain times, you know what I mean? And like, again, cutting our teeth, figuring out how to write songs, you know? And so he had gotten his deal with Cattino, and Cattino had loved a lot of that stuff that never got released, you know, that he'd heard. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he probably listened to 50, 60 of Drew's songs, and I was on a lot of them, definitely not all, but a lot of them, you know? So he knew my name. He didn't know who I was, but he knew my name. And I didn't find that out till I got to his lake house to go meet him. And I met him, and I hung, and he was like, man, I want to sign you. And he was like, will you stop taking meetings? Because I'd love to sign you. And it was in conjunction with Sony and Rusty Gaston and that whole team over there, which is just, I mean, that's as big as you get. That's as good as you get, you know, is Rusty Gaston and those, and Tom and Anna and Aubrey and all those folks over there. They're amazing. Kenley, and anyways, I can keep going. But anyways, like, I was already wide-eyed because it's Catino, and I just had so much respect for all the artists that he'd signed. But then, like, you're talking about Sony Publishing and being a part of that team and all of that. And I was like, I was just trying not to say yes. I mean, just because, like, I feel like if I, like, say yes, my wife will kill me. And so I was like, man, you know, as long as, like, we can work out all the details or whatever. And he goes, how about this? I think you're worth blank per year. If Sony won't do it, I'll make up the rest.
Whoa.
And the number that he gave me, it wasn't crazy money, but I knew it was a number my wife would say yes to, right? And I just said, you got yourself a deal on a handshake deal. And for the last 3 years, he's written me a check in August. He told me what he thought I was worth, and that's what he, you know, stuck to his word. And, like, that's somebody I want to work with. You know, that's cowboy shit, dude. Like, that somebody's going to give you one of those man cowboy handshakes right there, and it's like, well, if he's going to do that, I know what kind of guy he is already.
Yep. That's right. And it ended up creating all kinds of opportunities for you. And 3 weeks ago on this show, my guest was Blue Foley, who said that once someone starts getting momentum in Nashville, success, quote, the phone didn't start ringing off the hook, but they started picking up when I called, end quote. And I understand that you've been seeing that with opportunities coming your way.
Absolutely, man. Like, I mean, timing of everything is just wild on it all, you know. Like, when my deal ended and my first publishing deal, my boy was at like number 24 and it had been climbing for 30 weeks, right? I think it was on the chart for 50 something weeks. That was kind of the deal where, like, I was walking in like, hey, I'm looking for a deal, I've kind of got a song on the radio that's looking pretty good. Like, it was just crazy how that worked. It was also serendipitous that Jim knew all my music. And he knew that I could do My Boy, but he also knew that I could do the wild Drew Green stuff because he had heard some of the more exploratory Drew Green stuff that we did, which is still some of my favorites. And Drew's an absolute genius. I love that guy so much. Mm. But anyway, so it just seemed to fit. And then you're talking about the opportunities. You know, I signed with him in August. My daughter was born in December. And then in February of 22, I had a writer's retreat to go on that was 3 days long in the middle of the week with a 2-month-old. And I just remember being very tired. And these writer's retreats at Jim's Lake House, though, where I met him, all that, right? Like, Heaven by Kane Brown was written out there. One Thing Right, the Marshmallow Kane Brown thing, was written out there. And I show up, and there's a guy there named Nate Smith. And that's the first huge opportunity that Jim created for me. And now, I mean, at the time, nobody knew what a Nate Smith was, really. And, like, he had just gotten signed. And he showed up. He'd just gotten broken up with this girl he'd been dating for a year. And, you know, he's like, you know, she just said that I'd been at bars too much, been doing this, that, and the other. And, you know, and I saw her the next week with a guy at the bar. So we decided to play Monopoly first night on Friday night. But yeah, I mean, I've left my wife and 2-month-old to come play Monopoly on a Friday night. Anyway, like, so we played through the whole thing. And then, like, the next day I was like, but dude, we're writing about this tomorrow. And that song took us probably 8 or 9 hours that day. And we wrote about that. And there's another room going on downstairs. And, like I said, we just had the number one party on Monday. And, like, I'm thinking about things that I didn't say in my speech at the number one party that I wish I would have said. And it's so funny, like, we sat up there and we grinded on that song for like 8 or 9 hours. And it started out something different, but it was a lot of waste this, waste that, waste this. And Nate's idea, I think, was like too good of a day to waste whiskey or something like that. We were trying to get his story in there too, but Nate's such a positive guy that he was trying to be real positive. But like, I think about those people writing a song below us at that cabin, right? It had to be like the Jackson Brown story, the Eagles documentary. You know what I mean? Where, like, you know, where Glenn Frey's sitting there talking about, he's just like, every morning I'd hear his teapot go off and be like, dum, 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 dum. Doctor, my eyes are Doctor, my eyes are And he's like, I heard that song 9,000 times. But that just taught me that you have to grind. And the room below had some absolute hammer writers in it. Tranny Anderson, Lady Wilson, Heart Like a Truck, like all that kind of stuff. You know, she's on fire too. You know, and like, But, you know, that's what we're competing against. But we just happened to stumble upon Whiskey on You upstairs. And what you hear on the radio, the vocal that you hear on the radio, Nate did that morning in his pajamas, in his jam jams at the kitchen table. And 90% of that track, Lindsey Rhymes did at that kitchen table. They went into the studio, recut it with a band, recut the vocal and everything. Mm. And the demo we did that day, for whatever reason, the magic in it, whatever it was, sounded better. So a majority of what you hear on the radio, we did at a kitchen table.
Oh, my gosh. Great stuff. Great stuff. I'm joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from Nashville by singer, songwriter, guitar player Russell Sutton. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, he is at Russell Sutton Music on all three of those. Keep up with him online for details on when and where you can go see him perform live. Do let him know that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Do me a favor and let me know that you heard me talk about Owl on this podcast. Download that app and call me so we can connect. Owl is a terrific networking tool that allows you to make powerful connections via voice. It fast tracks you to be able to connect with people you want to meet from a wide range of industries without having to wait for connection requests to be accepted or private messages to be answered. I'm on there. My guest from episode 468, Daniel Mock, is on there. Someone that I'm talking to about hopefully writing a guest blog for my website is on there. The list goes on. Heck, I called someone on there when I had a question about how to do domain authentication for email marketing purposes when that all hit on February 1st. Do yourself a favor and download the app for free to start connecting with people that can help you in whatever you're doing. Go to my podcast website, nhte.net. And then click anywhere it says home, and then read the article under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. There are links in there to download Owl for free from the App Store or Google Play. I also have my invitation code in there, which you're going to need when you're setting up Owl on your phone, because that is a required field. Get it installed, and then call me, and we'll chat for 10 minutes longer if you want or need. Russell, we've been talking about a lot of great highlights, but let's be honest, there's a point where things get tough. Being a songwriter gets challenging. People who relocated to Nashville all of a sudden think about packing it in and leaving. In your case, though, you have had what you call your songwriting family to lean on. Can you kind of pull back that curtain on that for us and perhaps share some of those look in the mirror moments and maybe names of some of the people who encouraged you and helped you through things?
Without a doubt, I would not be here without my songwriting family. You know, a lot of us leave our families, we leave everything that we know, and we move to this town chasing a dream. And it can be very lonely. But you got to have that circle of friends that are especially like that get what you're trying to do. You know, like no one gets what we're trying to do other than us, because it's insane, Bruce. It's insane. What are we doing? Like, what are we thinking? You know what I mean? So, for example, whenever I got here, a couple of those guys like Randall Clay and Blue Foley, first two people I met in Nashville. Hmm. And I walk onto a patio at Losers at 2-3 p.m. They've already written two or three songs and are, you know, smashing a couple PBRs back in Blue's drinking days. You know, 3 years sober. Congrats to Blue. One of my absolute best friends, still my brother in this town, you know, that has helped me through a lot of stuff, you know. But like, for example, the day I met them, you know, and I was like, I just got here. And they're like, tell me about yourself. I was like, well, you know, I live in Austin. I used to work at Dell, but, you know, I play some gigs there. I've got a gig at Steiner Ranch Steakhouse every other Wednesday. It pays like $500 plus tips. Da, da, da. And Randall grabs me by the face and he's like, go home as soon as you can. Quickly. What are you doing here? Right. But man, like the importance of that is like, you know, I mentioned this earlier, like Lee Starr, right? Having a guy like that to learn how to co-write songs, like that you 100% trust, 100%, you know, like you're not going to get mad when he's like, that's the worst thing I've ever heard. You're just going to try and prove him wrong the next day, you know? And like the healthy competition, what is good for him is good for me, but I still want to be better than him. He still wants to be better. He's my best friend, so I want him to be the best writer in the world. You know, I think that goes for a lot of people. And then that translates also to, you know, you start getting your circle. I wouldn't be here without that group, because in 2019, my mom took her life in August of 2019. Oh. And my boy hadn't gone to radio. I had nothing going. And I flew to Texas. And for example, the first call that I got was that day that LB Shane was almost to Memphis and he was driving to Austin as fast as he could to be with me.
Wow.
And I had to tell him to turn around. If you remember, 2019 was 2 years after the whole duo thing and all that. I want you to remember that. You know what I mean? So I had to tell him to turn around. And then, you know, 2 days later, Blue Foley, Drew Green, Lee Starr, Kyle Coulihan, Scott Sean White, LB Shane, Lisa Johnson, Doug Johnson. I know I'm going to leave people out, but that's just the people that are off the top of my head that showed up right away, 13 hours away, and stayed until
came to Texas.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I was in Texas, and that list of people I just gave you all showed up in Texas within 2 days.
So Russell, was this a case of I'll probably just stay here and not go back to Nashville? Or was it, no, Bruce, don't put words in my mouth. I was just going there for my mom. Or was it, you know, a trying time in your songwriting career and you thought, you know what, as long as I'm back here, maybe
can
I'll just stay.
Can I say it 100? Can I say it 100%? Just be frank.
Please.
I didn't have a fucking clue.
Wow.
I didn't know what was going on in my life. I didn't know what I was doing. Mm. Everything was upside down, right? And then all these people, right? All these, like, there was more friends than family in the Holiday Inn, you know? And like, of course, my whole family's from Austin, whatever, but you know what I mean, right? My dad had to pay for like 5 separate hotel rooms. Not had to, he was willing, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad was like, whoever shows up, the room's on me, you know? And I lived in that Holiday Inn for like 6 weeks, Bruce, in Austin. I didn't want to leave, right? Mm. And a couple buddies stayed for a month or almost a month. And just said, I'll be here. And we didn't hang out every day. They just sit in their hotel, you know, forego work, forego rights, forego, you know, right over Zoom, Skype, or whatever, right? You know, I'm here till you don't need me. And then I came back, you know, I was like, how can you leave that on top of the dream, right? Because nobody would have faulted me for staying.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
Like, it wouldn't have been the whole tail between your legs come home story, which is a hard pill to swallow, right? So I understand that whole thing. But like, nobody would have blamed me, but man, I couldn't leave that shit.
Yeah, if somebody was to say to you at that time, you're going back to Nashville, why? You hand them that list of names and you go, this is why.
Absolutely, that's why. Because that's where my family is. Mm. My dad and my brother and my aunts and uncles are here, but my family's in Nashville, man.
That's
yeah,
right. That's right.
Those are my people. And what I love about our group, we call it the Freak Show Group, Freak Show Crew. That was the only writer's round I really wanted to play when I moved to town. Mm. And I got to play that round the day I got my publishing deal. And Terry Joe Box, who is absolutely one of my best friends to this day, like a sister slash motherly figure that you are glad isn't your mom, you know, but who just won a Grammy for album of the year as a songwriter with Lanny Wilson. Let's go. When we were all doing this, man, like, I remember going to the Freak Show and seeing this girl in a trucker hat with a dip in her lip with tattoos everywhere, singing like an angel. And I was like, who in God's name is that? And it was Ashley McBride.
Wow.
You know, who Blue and Terry Joe, who I think you've had on the show and all of them have written countless songs with and all that, you know.
But how fitting that is, though, that the one round that you only wanted to play in when you got to town, that that's the one that you play when you get your publishing deal. That's
the day I got it. And so I want to make sure that I tell everybody, if you're looking for a publishing deal, please call Terry Joe over and over and over and over again. And just don't let up. You know, email her twice, email her again. She loves tenacity.
I'm glad that you're lightening things up a little bit after that story about what you went through in Texas, because I was going to try to turn us around by reminding you that a year ago at this time, you had just gone to New York City to see Nate Smith perform Whiskey on You in the Tonight Show featuring Jimmy Fallon. So describe for us, A, both finding out that that was going to happen, meaning Nate being on the show performing the song, but also B, you going to the Tonight Show that day to see it happen.
That's wild, man. Like, you grew up watching The Tonight Show, you know what I mean? Like, and also, like, I'm at the age where, like, Carson had just gone off the air by the time that I got to the age of, like, knowing what The Tonight Show was and Leno taking over. So to me, it was kind of Leno, but, like, then your parents always talk about Johnny Carson. You hear all these, like, legends talking about being on there, mainly comedians, but still musicians and all that stuff, right? Like, huge. The Tonight Show's huge. And So we found out that the song was number one. And that week we were at a steak dinner on a Wednesday night with Rusty Gaston and all the Sony team and Jim Cotino and me and Lindsey Rhymes and Nate Smith. And there was probably like eight of us in this little private room in a steakhouse. And Nate, you know, we were all cheersing to the song being number one. And it was his first single. It was first number one. It was crazy. And he said, guys, even crazier today, I found out that I'm playing the Tonight Show next week.
Mm.
And he said, it's 5 days away. I'm doing it on Tuesday night. He said, I know it's short notice. But like, everybody says Nate's the nicest guy in the world. And like, I've even heard people question if it's genuine. And he's genuinely the annoyingly nicest human I've ever met in my life. Not annoyingly because he's nice. You're just like, how can someone be that good-hearted all the time? And I mean it. So he goes, they've only given us four tickets. I can't get any more tickets. And I figured he's about to be like, so sorry, dog.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's like, so, but I want to give them to you and Lindsay and y'all's wives so that the writers can come see us play on the Tonight Show.
Mm.
Which, like, I don't know, dude. Like, Elby's my brother and drove, like, the day after that. And dude didn't even invite me to the Opry hardly. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Gotcha.
Anyway, yeah, and when someone offers you a ticket to the Tonight Show, the answer is only yes, by the way.
Dude. Oh, I jumped through so many hoops. And like, and I didn't, you know, we get paid about 9 months later. So I didn't have like whiskey on you money yet. And I was like, all right, let's plan a full on New York trip in 5 days time. Those weren't cheap plane tickets. You know what I mean? But I was like, I figure if it's being played on the Tonight Show, it'll pay for itself within 3 months.
We might be sleeping standing up in a phone booth, but damn it, we're going to the Tonight Show.
I might
show.
Get a couple calls from Visa, but it's not a huge deal, right?
Oh, you know, outstanding.
They'll be my best friend soon.
Tell me this, were you bawling like a little baby when you were sitting in the audience watching him perform it?
I wasn't, man, and I don't say this to be poetic. I mean it when I say I was just trying to be there.
Mm.
That is some of the best advice I've ever gotten in my life from my dad. In moments like that, man, I just try to be there. And then after they're done, I try to pretend like it's a cool story, like it didn't really happen.
Yeah, I love it.
I do my absolute best every day to pretend like I still have to eat ramen in order to do what I do.
Well, the minute you start getting comfortable and resting on your laurels and putting your feet up on the desk, that's when the phone does stop ringing.
Absolutely. And I wouldn't say the phone even rings right now. It's just more people say yes more often.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And I've had so many opportunities created from Whiskey on You, man. Like, I've got so much going this year, and I'm so grateful for it.
Tell us, because we're only in the first quarter of 2024, so go ahead, looking ahead, what have you got slated to come out this year?
So this last Friday, I just had a song come out that you're going to hear at the end of the show called Knee Deep in Neon that I wrote with Chris Young, and it's on his latest album, Young Love and Saturday Nights, track number 17. So that just came out on Friday, April the 5th. I've got Rather Be Lonely coming out with Nate Smith on his new EP. And it is one of my absolute favorite songs that I've ever written. It was me and Nate and Lindsay again, the same Whiskey on You crew. Funny enough, it's only our second time to ever write together. We've written twice. The first time we got Whiskey on You, second time we wrote, we got this. Again, it was another 8-hour ride at Lindsay's house here in Nashville, but we've actually only written together twice. And so that's coming out on April the 5th. And then on April the 12th, the following Friday after that, I've got a song called Say What You Want coming out on Morgan Evans' live EP and DVD. You know, he did these like two consecutive shows at this theater in Australia, and then they did a video for it. They're also putting out a live album and a song he's never released before. It's called Say What You Want, and that'll be on that on April the 12th. And you can probably guess who or what it's about. I'll just say that.
Well, and Russell just talked about it. We are going to close today with another song that he wrote, one called Knee Deep in Neon by Chris Young. So before I let you go and I play that track, Russell, just share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Yeah, man. So like, I would say that this was my first really big artist write. Like, that sounds weird to say now that Nate Smith is as big as he is, you know? After World on Fire, 10 weeks, number one, you know what I mean? All that stuff, Bulletproof's going out. Like, it's weird to say that, but I didn't really know. Nobody really knew who Nate was whenever I wrote him. Chris Young is a freaking legend in country music right now. I used to listen to all his stuff when I was trying to figure out how to write songs. You know,
Wow.
This was like a first real, like, all right, dude, you think you got it? We'll put you in the room with a big boy. Mm. You know, it was a title that I'd had for a couple of months. And for the first time ever, I saved it because I was like, I know this is a Chris Young title. And I knew I had that right coming out.
Interesting.
And you obviously, you let the artist, you know, what do you want to write about, man? You know, and he had set a hook. He said, I uphold my record of being reckless or something like that. You know, it was along those lines. Well, the first line of that song that you're about to hear is that hook. Because as soon as I said, well, I got a hook called Neat, Neat, and Neon. When you hear the song, this is going to be funny. You're going to understand it. Christian immediately goes, Neat, Neat, and Neon. And I'd never met him, right? And I go, oh, wow, you are Chris Young. And he looked at me like, you little shit, but that was funny. You know what I mean? And then so we used his hook for the first line of the song, you know? Because it was still a great hook, you know? But when I said that and when he sang it, the way he sang it with that melody and everything, we were like, that already sounds great, dude.
Wow.
And then we were off to the races there. And that's me, Lindsey Rhymes, who you've heard me talk about a lot today.
Yeah.
But this song is me, Lindsey Rhymes, Chris Young. Chris Young's an amazing guy to write with. You also don't know how an artist is going to be to write with. Yeah. The dude's got a lot to say. He is an amazing writer in his own right, which is always a hell of a surprise, and you love it. You know what I mean? And I loved that he loved it. And, like, one other funny little anecdote is that, like, that morning he came in and, like, you know, he had had some big, like, industry thing the night before, so he was, like, forced to be out late. And so he comes in, he's kind of gravelly voice when he gets in there. And he'd kind of been talking like that the whole time. And then Lindsey's like, you want to give it a go on a little demo? Dude stands up in the room and sings, like, the records. It was the most, you're just like, it's why you make the big bucks. You know what I mean? Just like, I mean, like, I've never seen somebody just immediately turn it on and just floored it right there. It was impressive. I feel like I'm outgunned every day, and I just try to do my best. Like, you know what I mean?
I'm picturing, like, Joe Buck getting ready to walk in to do Monday Night Football, and he's just kind of hanging out in the press box talking to somebody like this, and then he goes, Dak Prescott's got CeeDee Lamb wide open down the sideline.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Or Hank Jr.'s like, hey, guy, hey. This is like my dad talking about one of his tour stories, like being on tour with Hank Jr. back in the day. He's like, hey, guys, hey, man, it's great to see you. Great to see you. He gets up on stage, and he's like, rah, rah.
But you know, Russell, just to put a bow on this whole conversation, I loved that you closed by talking about how you found Chris to be in being in the room with him, because if you think back to the heartwarming story that you talked about of all those people being there for you, it's all this time, all this effort, all this investing that you've done in your career, walking away from Dell and saying, this is what I want to do. I'm going to go and I'm just going to write for 6 months. It's all come back to you. You've just told so many great stories, period. But about so many nice people, so many good people, so just good human beings. Yes, exceptionally talented. But it's wonderful to hear that everything that you've gone through, and I'm kind of picturing like someone who's in the army crawling on the ground and, you know, with their arms and their belly and everything. And you went through all that. You crawled through all that mud, through all those leaves. And at the end of it, were all these people helping you up and all these people patting you on the back and you looking up at them going, you're all not supposed to be this nice. Man, this is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Like, none of these songs, like me being in Nashville, none of it happens without the other people that did it to me, right? Songs don't happen without the co-writers. Like, I wouldn't be here without my Nashville family. Also wouldn't be here without my dad, you know, without a doubt, and my wife, and now my little two-year-old girl. Like, gives me a reason to do what I'm doing, you know? Mm. Like, they went out of town for a week, and I was like, oh, I don't like it. I don't like my house anymore. I don't want any of the stuff. It's like, you realize, dude, it's like, dude, it's like, I don't care how good anybody tells me I am, how much success you have, man. It doesn't mean shit if you don't have somebody to share it with.
Wow.
You know?
Wow. So. Great stuff. Great stuff. Russell, congratulations. I mean, this is just the latest one, Knee Deep in Neon, but so much that you've done and so much, as I said, that we know is going to be coming ahead for you. Really appreciate you making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruce. I love you, man.
My pleasure, buddy. With that, folks, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, guitar player Russell Sutton. Again, find him, follow him, engage with him on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. He is at Russell Sutton Music on all three of those. Keep up with him online for information on where and when you can go see him perform live. Be sure to let Russell know that you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Russell and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 years now without missing once, by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you'll see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 528. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song written by Russell Sutton. This is the demo of the one he just talked about. It's what they did the day they wrote the song. As performed by Chris Young, it's called Knee Deep in Neon.
Sometimes I uphold my record of being reckless. It's a niche that I just gotta scratch when I start to get restless. If you see a parking lot.